sorry about your race car. It sure looks bent. Will you be here next week? And are we still friends? I really didn't mean it. It was a racing deal. I got a little too close. It got a little too real. Then you checked up in the corner and I tapped you in the rear. You went spinning somewhere and it's all so clear. There's a devil in your helmet. Who's on tonight? Devil in your helmet, giving bad advice. It's been a good day so far. I put her in the show, sitting nice and pretty outside front row. Two laps later, babe is on a rail, going for the lead with the devil on my tail. Then wham bam, thank you ma'am, where'd they all go? Leg break, burn, turn, there's the wall. A little tip. Well, there's a devil in your helmet. Who's on tonight? Devil in your helmet, giving bad advice.
Hello, race fans. How you doing tonight? We're struggling in here in the studio today. Can't seem to get my Skype up, so y'all just bear with us a little bit, and we'll get this rock and roll show on the way. Wait a minute, this ain't a rock and roll show, is it? What is this thing about anyway?
Rock and race course.
Rock and race car, racing and rocking. That's the name of another show on the network. That's not this one. Anyway, hey, man, seems like we've been gone for a long time, doesn't it?
That's because we have.
I forgot how to do a show. I can't get my Skype up, so I can't get Tim on. Tim, if you're out there, if you're listening, just hang tight. I'm working on it. Fellas, bring us up to date about what you've been doing while I go work on this. Take it away, Jack.
Jack, you need to tell us about your trip.
Well, you know, Margaret and I went to the Grand Canyon, which was quite an adventure. It's the first time I've ever been there. Margaret's been there before. And didn't see a whole lot of racing stuff out there.
You know, old junk race cars.
Well, you know, it was strange. You know, we had a conversation on here probably a month or two ago about you don't see too many Dale Earnhardt hats anymore.
Right.
The only racing thing I saw in the Grand Canyon was a guy wearing a Dale Earnhardt hat.
But I saw somebody at the Grand Canyon wearing a goat rodeo hat.
Yeah. I had my goat rodeo hat on, so we had a ball, but we went to every stop around the Grand Canyon on the, I guess, the north side, no, the south side, and went to the west side where the skywalk was, and that was pretty cool. That was absolutely cool.
That's all taken place since I was out there. I've been there twice, but I went to the north rim one time and the south rim the other time, and the sky, what do they call it?
Skywalk.
Skywalk wasn't there at the time. But as afraid of high places or afraid of falling as I am, I don't think I'll be walking out on that glass walkway.
Yep.
With what is it? Something like 4,000 feet?
Yeah, 3,000 or something. Straight down.
Yeah.
Is it like a platform that goes out?
Yeah,
it's glass.
They call it a glass platform, but it's got two steel beams around the borders that are pretty wide, and then there's maybe a 3.5-4 foot glass portion in the between the two beams that you can look straight down, but it's pretty cool, very cool.
I enjoyed the Grand Canyon a lot, but I don't think I could have done the. I had enough trouble standing 10 feet from the edge looking out and down.
that was pretty neat. Went to a neat little bar in a town called Williams, Arizona, where we stayed and kind of worked out of there. An old town, went to a bar there, had some NASCAR posters and that type of thing. So that's pretty neat. So.
Where is Williams in relation to Flagstaff?
Yeah, it's close, but not that close.
I like Williams.
Have you been there?
Yeah, we stopped at Williams when I went to Grand Canyon.
Did y'all go to some of those bars downtown?
Yep.
They're pretty cool, aren't they?
Yeah. Real cool stuff.
One of them is the oldest bar in Arizona.
And on the way out, we ate at the Roadkill Cafe.
Yep. Well, we didn't eat at the Roadkill Cafe. Margaret wouldn't go for something like that.
That doesn't sound like Margaret.
When we're on a trip, she doesn't go for Hardee's, McDonald's, or any place she can eat around here. She wants something totally different. So.
Yeah, so, I think you could get a buffalo nut sandwich there.
Cool, I guess. If you like that sort of thing.
If you like that sort of stuff.
So how's Skype coming, Jeff? You about to get her up?
I'm restarting the computer. It's coming back up.
Cool.
I'm going to try again here in a minute. So, Bopper, what have you been doing while we've been off?
Been working.
Working on race car.
Yeah. We've had a big Bell and Bell race since we was last here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We were at Fayetteville a couple of weeks ago. Saturday was a week ago. Had 19 drivers took the green flag, and we had Pete Corey. He couldn't make it. He was there with his car, but he felt a little under the weather, so we would have had 20 guys.
Wow.
We had 20 guys, that's, you know, great, but 19 was actually on
now,
the track.
Is that the biggest field y'all have had?
I think it is.
Yeah, I think it is, too.
I think it is.
I think it is, too. I'd have to go back and look, but I think that it may have been equaled at one time, but it's not been exceeded. That was we actually had 20 that would have taken the track had Pete not been feeling a little under the weather.
And I have to say that Kyle Bell won his division. Kyle Bell drove a heck of a race, led every lap, and parked her in victory lane. So hats off to Kyle Bell and the 38 Pink Lady.
And how about the 300? I think Bobby finally has the suspension figured out on the thing. Our youngster driver, Mr. Reese Corbett, was driving the car, and I was out of our pit, and I came back in, and Bobby said, did you watch Reese practice? Did you watch? I said, no. He said, he was picking the left front wheel up all the way down the front stretch. There's only one other car that races with us that's capable of doing that.
Yeah, I had put a what's commonly
known, Corey, right?
As a as a three-link rear suspension in my old car, not really knowing I knew the big picture, but I didn't know any of the nuances. So anyway, she was picking up the left front.
Wow.
Not by design, but it kind of.
I'm gonna tell you, folks, that is grabbing the track when you can torque one hard enough on dirt to pick up the left front wheel going down the stretch. That is saying something.
Cody, are you on?
I am on.
All right.
Hey, buddy. It says Tim's not online. Has anybody been on chat?
Tim is on. He's on chat.
He's on chat.
He's on chat.
Somebody say something.
How much pressure is that put on the right front when you lift the left rear, left front up?
Not a great deal. Because
just digging in.
It's picking up the whole front of the car, so it doesn't load the right front terribly when you pick up the left front.
Loads the right rear.
Yeah.
It loads the right rear,
and that's what you want.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really do a number on the right front.
So what have you been doing while we've been gone, Hugh?
Working at Bobby's.
Next. How about you, Tim?
Oh, I've been busy here and there, running here, taking care of Ann, doing things with grandsons, all that good stuff.
Good. How about you, Cody?
Oh, nothing too much. Just working.
Cody, did you go to the Nationals at Bristol?
No, I was planning to, but, there was a threat of rain, so I decided not to go, and then come to find out it didn't even rain. So I hate that I didn't go, but we're planning on it anyway.
I did get to go to a graduation ceremony at Brunswick Community College. My granddaughter graduated from nursing school while we were off, which was a big milestone for our family.
They are... Jack, you might know this. Myrtle Beach Speedway is having hosting a monster truck event coming up the middle of June, like the 16th or somewhere along in there. And my grandson, he is so into monster trucks. We might get a chance to go, and that would be kind of cool for me, because I was thinking it was it will be 55 years ago this June that I first ever raced right? there, and that's where it was. So that would be kind of cool. If we can.
Now, I think they had the monster truck event at Myrtle Beach Speedway last year, and it was a sellout, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think they're going to have another one. It's not the Monster Jams. There's different sanctioning bodies. It's called TRAX, T-R-A-X-X. So that's the one they're having this time. But anyway, monster trucks is a monster truck. They all jump over stuff and smash cars and stuff. So I'm sure it will be he'll like it. So maybe we can do that coming up in a couple of weeks. And I think it's Bell and Bell night at Myrtle Beach this week. So this is the anniversary of my infamous crash last year.
Well, let's hope you don't repeat it.
Anniversary of that occasion.
Not going to happen.
Yeah, it took me from here to November to get it fixed.
Yeah. Yeah, coming up on the show tonight around 7:30, we're going to have an interview with Mr. John Close, who is the author of a brand new book called 1001 NASCAR Facts. And that's going to be pretty interesting.
Oh, I want to tell y'all something. I took a lot of pride in this. I saw a trailer on some. It might have been on Facebook. It might have been just on a news feed somewhere. Anyway, y'all are probably aware that Cars 3 is coming out. The Disney Pixar saga, or the series of the Cars, where Lightning McQueen and all of his friends are race cars and that my grandson loves them too, so I sort of keep up with that too. But they're coming out with a new one in June, and I saw a trailer on it the other day, and it had a picture. Of course, it's all animated, but it had Lightning McQueen at an old track, and it said Cars 3 visits a ghost track.
Yeah, how about that?
I mean, we
saw that trailer.
Coined that phrase. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Talking Nietzsche is the Speedway Popper.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, the cool thing was the Disney Pixar used the term ghost track. So we have...
We ended up coining something.
We have got something into the American lexicon.
How about that, man?
For better or worse, ghost track is now the name of... it's one of them words that describe... The word describes the definition.
It does.
Self-explanatory.
that's probably been 8 or 9 years ago when you started doing those ghost track
Almost 10.
Yeah, almost 10.
Yeah, so it's made it... The term has made it that far. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
I just lost Skype again.
Oh, man.
Tim, are you there?
He was a second ago.
Well, the gremlins are definitely in the house tonight, folks.
Yeah, so we will have to check out Cars 3 coming soon, coming real soon now. Yeah. I've seen a little bit of the bits and pieces of it, and I think there's some new kids on the block that Lightning McQueen is, this might be his final hoorah. Several NASCAR drivers, I think, are making our voices and so on and so forth. In the last one, there was Darrell Cartrip. He was a villain, Darrell Cartrip.
Well, in the first one, Humpy Wheeler was the voice of one of the characters.
And the Hudson was actually Paul Newman, Humpy Wheeler's Hudson in the first one. Did they call him Doc Hudson? I think it was.
Bobby, you've been watching all those cars.
I've watched. I couldn't tell you how many. I mean, I watch them with Kai. He knows every bit of every one of them. And there's the Richard Petty Superbird is that's the king. That's his name in the show. So yeah, I know I'm up on Cars. So I'm looking forward to Cars 3.
for more reasons than one.
I don't know what's going on with Skype. I got it back, and it just dumped again. Mm. It's just completely blanking from the screen. So keep talking, fellas.
So Tim told us before we lost him that the ghost track that they visit is Okanichi.
Yep. I had heard that myself somewhere. I don't remember where I heard that, but that was the ghost track that they visited was Okanichi.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty
What was the TV ratings for the 600 this past week? Did you get that by me?
I saw an article on J-Ski, and I was telling Hugh this morning. Without it was kind of generic. It said TV viewership for Indy and Coca-Cola 600 are down, and it sort of described them both together, and it said that the viewership was down 13%. Now, I don't know if that was for each of them or some kind of average
or some combination,
but that's what the article I read said. It was down 13%, but it lumped those two together for whatever that means. But whatever it doesn't mean it was up. You know, there's
obviously.
I mean, it doesn't mean it was up. Any way you spin it, it was still down. Indy, they didn't. Last year's 100th anniversary looked virtually sold out. This year, there were some pockets that weren't full, but it was still a nice crowd.
Yeah, when you have 300,000 people, it's still a nice crowd.
I mean,
that's
Indy
a bunch of folks, no matter where you put them.
Yeah, amen.
One of the world's biggest seating facilities, and to even come close to filling it up, you've done something.
Alex posted on the chat line that it was. He just put 2.8. I assume that's the Charlotte rating.
Yeah, I think that was correct. Let's see here.
That's bad.
Yeah.
It's better than 1.6.
Yeah.
I think Alex.
Yeah, even I can do that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's 2.8.
I mean, that's better than, I mean.
But now, part of their problem was it rained in the middle of it.
Yep.
You know, that had to hurt the numbers.
Yeah,
it was down for about an hour and 40 minutes,
yeah.
Hour and 50 minutes.
Yeah, okay, down from 3.6.
I don't know about the rest of the fans, but I very much enjoyed watching the little clip that they played during the downtime of the history of Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Yeah.
It for me, it brought back lots of memories. One of the things that, of course, I especially liked was that they showed a bunch of Jay Howard shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I commented to a friend of mine the next day. I said, well, they showed off a bunch of our handiwork.
No, it would have been nice in that segment had they got the video to match up with what we're talking about, because they were talking about the Fireball Roberts wreck and showed him in a 63 Ford running Daytona. You know, that was
really?
Just one of the many visual errors, I call it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happens when you get a bunch of historical footage. Lots of times the narrator doesn't know anything about the footage, so he's reading from a script, and the guy in the video booth is just putting stuff up, and they don't quite often they don't match, and that's a shame.
That's one of them things, Tim, though, that if you're any kind of historian at all, you know that.
You
just know
that.
You know that.
Yeah, I know. And that's fine. And I'm sure the ones that don't give a damn don't give a damn, and they're not even going to watch it for that anyway. So, you know, it's just little things like that that irk me.
Yeah, I know where you're coming from. Those are, if you're going to be historical, be that way. It's kind of where my position. But if you don't, if you're not, then don't.
Speaking of historical. The Tim, you probably got the scoop on this. The Historic Speedway Group's event is not going to happen this year?
No, it is not going to happen as it was originally planned, and it appears it probably will not happen at all this year, although there are still discussions going on about alternatives. And if I really knew anything I could tell you, I would do it. But right now, there's nothing to tell.
But what I heard was that the parking lot where everybody parks was sold, and their construction going on, getting ready to go on there, and they're not going to be able to go there. The question I have is, can't they have it on the track?
Well, the discussion about all that was, that would be a great idea, but what happens if it should rain, you know, to get down there at the
can't
track?
Get everybody out,
they got to go down that dirt road that you're familiar with.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be able to get it out, and with all the rainy seasons that we've had in North and South Carolina, that is of a major concern.
Man, that's tough. That's so sad to hear that might happen.
Oh,
it is.
Yeah, it really is.
Tim, I know you're real close to that group. What is the general feeling for the future? Let's assume this year don't happen at all. What does that mean for the future?
Well, I think for the future there is still hope. You know, the hope burns eternal, and I think that there are enough people driving behind it that something will probably come to fruition in the future as to probably next year, but I could not even begin to surmise what that might be.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that's very concerning and very sad.
Yeah, very sad.
Well, I think the main focus of everything heading in that direction right now has flipped from Okinichi, and a lot of the people that were concentrating on Okinichi are now concentrating on the Augusta event, which comes up 2 weeks before Okinichi was scheduled, or at least that's what I'm picking up from all the people that are contacting me, because I'm on the board at ARPS.
Okay, so talk about that just a minute, Tim. And since you're on the board now, the Rex White memorial thing, the bench, not the memorial,
all right,
but the bench.
The Hall of Fame induction ceremony will be Friday night, as always. The Rex White Hall of Rex White Memorial Plaza, and the bench that will be dedicated to him will be set for Saturday the 16th, and I think Rex will be there along with a lot of other people. I know Donnie Allison will be there as well, because he's being inducted into the Hall of Fame, but Rex is excited about that, and all of us at ARPS are excited, because Rex has, as you know, really supported everything that goes on. He supports everything that goes on at Augusta anywhere. He is NASCAR's purest and best ambassador.
That's an absolute fact.
Yeah, he really is. So that will be happening on the 16th. It's free. The Hall of Fame banquet costs you $20, and you'll need tickets in advance probably. I don't think there'll be any left for the door. But the Saturday event on the 16th is totally free. Just be at Diamond Lakes Park in Epsiba, which is really the outskirts of Augusta. So,
Tim.
Yes, sir.
Can we switch back to Okinichi just for a second?
Sure.
Do you know, this is a question I've always had, who actually owns the property there now, where
the
racetrack is?
The Okinichi Speedway is a federal historic landmark. It is one of three. Bonneville Salt Flats, Indianapolis, and Okinichi are the only three federally recognized historic landmarks. The property that leads up to all of that's owned by, I don't know what corporation, but it was just sold, and they're renovating the parking lot and renovating a couple of the buildings, and it's just a mess.
Well, let me ask you, if a site is a federal historical site, does that mean they own the property by definition?
It was the property was in a trust, American Home Trust or something like that.
It is. It is in a trust, and it's through that trust that the historic designation came, but in reality, once you get federal historic designation, there's nothing that you can really do without total complete approval from the Federal Historic Society, which they are very hesitant to give when you're messing with a historical place.
Well, it wasn't too long ago there was concerns about a bypass going through that whole site. Remember that?
Yeah, there was, and that's why they fought so hard to get the federal designation, so they could have that landmark, so that bypass could not go through there. Once the federal government designates it as a historic site, you really can't do anything without the federal government's approval, and there is no bypass going through there now.
Yeah, although it sort of sounds like they've kind of traded the devil for the deep blue sea.
Yeah. So the track is probably pretty secure, but you just can't get to it.
You can't get to it, and you can't have nothing.
Well, the property that trust is part of is over on the other side of the river.
Mm-hmm. It's Ayers Mount.
Yeah, Ayers Mount. It's not part of that commercial stuff up there at the top. That's not connected at all.
At one point in time, did not Bill France own Okinichi, or him and Enoch Staley?
Yes.
Didn't they literally own it?
Yes. Had football games in the infield.
Now, when he left there in 1968, well, that was the last race they ever had, and then the next year he moved the date to Talladega. What happened at that? Did he just keep on owning it? At some point in time, it just, what happened in the meantime to the ownership part of it? Just a question of
that I do not know, but I guarantee you, when it quit making money for Bill France, he was out of it completely. you know, either gave it away, sold it, or did something with it. But I don't know the details.
We need Frank Craig for that.
Yeah, and who and how much say, if any, does the city of Hillsborough, the Chamber of Commerce, and all those kinds of various, do they have in this whole thing, this event?
Well, the city of Hillsborough, I think, has supported it, probably not financially, but has supported it in whatever you want to say, not financially. They reaped a lot of benefit from it. I think the city of Hillsborough did, from the people that were coming in and spending money for, first, I think it was 2 days, and then it got down to the one-day deal last year. But there was a lot of money being spent there by the people that came in. So they were involved in it to that. Now, who was the other entity you asked about?
There was some, was there some issue that they could not clear-cut the infield, like that, like you all did at Columbia, that Okanichi?
Well, everything that they touch there has to go through the Ayers Mount people. And they had a guy there, Bill, I forgot what Bill's last name was, who worked very closely with them and had to approve every tree that they cut and everything that they trimmed. You know, from clearing the trees out of the track to open the track surface to clearing that part of the infield that they finally eventually did clear there. You know, it's just that small section, I guess, that was where the football field was.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
Go ahead, fellas. I'll get our guest on the line here.
All right. Let's get John on.
Well, we could just hope that all these issues get straightened out with Okanichi and Hillsborough. That's certainly a great show.
Yeah, it is. And it just broke my heart to get that news when it came out, I think, last Monday, I believe it was.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like you, Tim. I was real. I was making an effort to really try to make that happen for me this year.
Yeah, me also.
Well, change your effort to come to Augusta.
Yeah, I haven't been to Augusta since the first or second one either, so I might have to go down there.
Hey, it ain't much further than Okanichi for me. Okanichi's further than what you think.
I went to the first two, I think, at Augusta, and the first three at Hillsborough.
I haven't been to Augusta since I left Fort Gordon basic training in 65.
Oh, they still got a bunk for you down there, Hugh.
No, I'm sure that the old World War II barracks that I slept in is long gone. They were tearing those things down as fast as they could till Vietnam came along, and then they postponed the demise of some of the barracks till they got that war out of the way. But I'm sure now that none of those barracks are there. Somehow or another, I don't think I would miss anything about Fort Gordon.
I have not actually been to the fort. I've been close to it, but...
Stand by here just a second. We got our guest on the show. John Close is with us. Take it away.
Hey, John, this is Jack. How you doing?
Jack, really good to hear your voice again. How you been, pal?
I'm been great. Well, you got a brand new book out that just came out a couple weeks ago, and it has jumped up the charts on Amazon to the number one auto racing in history, category. So we will definitely want to talk about 1001 NASCAR facts tonight. But before we get into that, can you kind of tell our audience a little bit about John Close? And I know you've been involved in racing all your life, so kind of bring us up to date a little bit with that.
Well, Jack, you know, when people ask me how I got into it, I always tell them it's genetic, because my dad got out of World War II, and the first thing he did was start building race cars. So when I came along in the 50s, you know, I was born into a family that was a racing family, like so many other people who have had long-term careers in our sport. So, you know, I followed it forever. I chased my dad's cars all over the Midwest as a kid. And then when I got out of school, out of journalism school in college, I was basically hired at a daily newspaper because I knew about auto racing. And that was at a time in the late 70s, early 80s, when, you know, there just wasn't the proliferation of media that covered auto racing. And it was a emerging sport, and there were opportunities for people who knew about it. So I started writing at a daily newspaper about auto racing, and that branched into other kinds of publications down the road, like Stock Car Racing Magazine and Circle Track, and back in the day when it was called Grand National Scene. You know, I was very fortunate to write for those publications and actually started covering races, NASCAR races in the middle 80s. My first race was Rusty Wallace's first win at Bristol in 86.
Wow.
So, you know, that goes back a ways, and I continued to write into the 90s, and then finally I got enough cred in the community that in 94 I was hired to be Bobby Labonte's public relations guy in Cup for the Maxwell House car, and that just started a whole long odyssey of me moving to North Carolina and working for different teams year after year. And you know, Jack, you and I met when they made me a spotter, and
yep.
I wound up spotting for 14 seasons, and it just didn't get better than that. You know, to write about races is one thing, fellas, but to actually participate in them is you know, completely different, and a thrill that I had never ever anticipated for myself.
You
finally, after about 2012 or so, I tried to retire, but I had written a couple of other books, and I was approached in October of 2015 by CarTech Books to write 1001 NASCAR Facts, and I guess that brings us to here.
Yep. I noticed in part of your book, you give credit to moving to North Carolina to Rich Bickle, a short-term track ace from out west. Did you have a long career with him also?
Well, you know, I knew him really well from Wisconsin. You know, he was a stomper on the late model tracks, and a contemporary of really great short track drivers, you know, like Dick Trickle and Joe Shear and those kind of Midwestern stars. And so I knew him really well and wrote about him a bunch in the early years of my career. And then he came down here in 89 and started racing in NASCAR. And he was pretty instrumental in helping me get down here. And he was certainly instrumental in saving me a couple times because, you know, truth be told, I got fired a bunch. You know, it most of the time it had nothing to do with me. You know, the team lost a sponsor or the driver quit and went someplace else. Heck, I was on one team where, you know, the owner, he cashed the check and walked away with the funds. So, you know, it was a really kind of unstable business back in the 90s, but fortunately Rich was always there. And so I got to work for Richard Petty's truck team because of him. And, you know, I got to spot, you know, great races. Like, he made me a spotter, you know. I got to spot the Daytona 500 and things like that with him, and spot the Snowball Derby and win that with him. You know, those were great times. And, yeah, you know, he was kind of like a brother to me. And, you know, back then, Jack, we could have a pretty good time, too. And he was known as a fellow who had a good time.
So, in other words, y'all had a big time off the racetrack, too.
I'm really glad they didn't have these dang picture phones that they got now, because we'd all been in big trouble.
All right, your newest book that just came out a couple weeks ago, 1001 NASCAR Facts. Yeah, I know you've been working on it for at least a year and a half, maybe longer. So did you have to do a lot of research on this? I mean, were you day in and day out researching? How'd you put it together?
Well, you know, they had they have a format for the books. 1001 NASCAR Facts is actually a part of a series of books by CarTech Books, and they have 1001 Muscle Car Facts, 1001 Harley Facts, 1001 Drag Racing Facts, and I want to say 1001 Mustang Facts. And so they determined they wanted to have a NASCAR book in that format, and they contacted me. The beauty of it, Jack, is that they pretty much allowed me to go ahead and determine the content of it. I had a free hand in that. So, you know, I was able to research not only the things that at least initially I knew, but the discovery. And as you mentioned, it was a day-to-day quest. The discovery of things that I didn't know. You know, I've been in racing all my life and a part of NASCAR for more than 25, 30 years. And, and the stuff I learned about the sport was really, really pretty interesting. And that all came about, thankfully, to some through the efforts of some really good friends in Georgia. Brandon Reed helped me connect with the Georgia Racing Hall of Fame, who provided me some great stuff. He also got me in touch with people like Gober Sosabe's family and the Flocks and, Eddie Samples. Their families had these amazing archives, fellows. It was, as a racing junkie, to be able to just see and touch some of these artifacts, old helmets, trophies, rule books, not to mention the photos, and I think that might be the strongest part of the book, is that there's 125 photos in 1001 NASCAR facts that are from some sources that I'm sure people haven't seen before. And so the discovery or the research, while it was really a grind, was probably the best part, because it was just such an honor to be able to connect with these people who their families were at the backbone of our sport. And, what an honor to be able to go into their homes and their shops and their man caves, and see this stuff. So it took about 9 months to write, and then the process is it goes to edit and it comes back, and then it goes to edit again and layout, and then it comes back, and then it goes through one more final edit, and then it goes to print. So when we laid out the timetable for the book, we knew that we wanted to launch it during the recently completed All-Star Week and the 600 Week at the Speedway over here in Charlotte. And, I love it when a plan came together like that. I guess the only thing that really surprised me is never in a million years did I think that in the first 2 weeks it was out, it would shoot to number one on Amazon in auto racing and auto racing history. And it's fallen off a little bit the last couple of days, but, that just really stunned me as to the reception that the community has given this book.
Yeah, I love the format for the book, where you basically have these 1001 facts starting back way before NASCAR started, going all the way up to the beginning of 2017. But each one of them is numbered, and it's a very easy read for a racing historian or somebody even new coming in trying to learn about NASCAR and what the way things developed over the years. I made a couple notes of some things that I didn't know just thumbing through your book, like number 161, I thought was pretty cool, where I'm going to put it in my words, not in yours. Yours is a lot better than mine, but Pure Oil Company was giving away free gas in 1952. Everybody kind of knows that. But I never knew that they were the first ones to give away racing tires, nylon core racing tires. I mean, that's a new fact for me.
Yeah, the research was great, Jack. And like you said, it's a really easy-to-read format because it's done by decade.
Yep.
So as a NASCAR fan, we always hear everybody go, well, geez, I loved it when it was the 70s, or I loved it in the 90s, or, some of the old-timers, like, well, me, in the 60s and even in the late 50s, I remember that pretty well as well. So, if there's a favorite part, you can go right to that decade, and each chapter is further broken down. There's actually about the cars and what the vehicles were like at that time, what some of the rules were, what the fastest cars were, what the engines were like, what the safety features were like. And then there's a second part of that called Pit Pass. I didn't want to make it just drivers, because there are so many people who have impacted our sport off the track. And, whether they're mechanics or crew chiefs or, track promoters or track owners or TV people. So I wanted that to be all-inclusive as a personality area, not just drivers. So that's broken out in every chapter, who were the most important people in the decade. Then there's the tracks and how they developed in each decade, and which were the best ones and which ones had unique races at only one of a kind races. You know, some of those facts, like, you know, we raced in Oklahoma one time, and it was an official race. It got canceled because it was so dusty at the Tulsa Fairgrounds that after 30 some laps, Lee Petty pulled off, ran across the racetrack, grabbed the flag, red flagged the race. You know, took the flag away from the starter, red flagged the race because it was so dusty they couldn't see. NASCAR canceled the rest of the race, never rescheduled it, and we've never raced in Oklahoma again.
Yep.
You know, that was the kind of stuff I was finding decade by decade in the track stuff. And then finally the milestones, you know, who set what records, who won what money, you know, who did some incredible things. You know, I saw Ned Jarrett this past week at an autograph session I participated in here in Charlotte, and we laughed about, you know, how sometimes people complain about today's racing and it's not this and it's not that and I wish it was the old days. And Ned and I laughed about how twice in 1965 he won a race by 22 laps, you know. Can you imagine what kind of outcry there'd be today if somebody won by 22 laps?
Yep.
You know, so there's all kinds of cool stuff like that in the book. I think it really shows how NASCAR's progressed over the years, how they've never been afraid to change anything. You know, again, this year we've had some significant rule changes, and you know, a lot of people are, oh my gosh, the sky's falling, and it's not like it used to be. Trust me, it's exactly like it used to be, because one thing that I really learned about writing this book is that NASCAR's never been afraid to change anything. And if it works, great, they'll keep it. And if it doesn't, they'll get rid of it pretty quick.
Yep.
So, you know, it's one of those, the more things change, the more they stay the same. But in the end, guys, the experience of writing this book was probably one of the most fun things I've ever done in racing. Really learned a lot personally, met some incredible people. And, you know, again, got to see some amazing artifacts that, you know, as a kid growing up in Wisconsin following racing, I never, ever dreamed I'd get to do.
Wow. Another one I've kind of flagged, John, was number 413, talking about Jimmy Vaughn at Talladega in 1969, running his 68 Camaro to 14th place finish in the Grand Touring race, turning around the next day and running in the Talladega 500. Finishing seventh, which everybody knew the Grand American Cars ran in that race. But what I didn't know is he ran 747 miles on the same set of tires, ran it in both
races.
Isn't
that something?
Yeah.
Isn't that something? Yeah, you know, that whole deal there was part of the PDA experiment in NASCAR. A lot of fans don't know that in 69, they formed the Professional Drivers Association, which, for lack of a better term, was kind of like unionizing the drivers, just as baseball players got unionized during that period of time. Football obviously has a union, and the drivers, led by Richard Petty and some others, formed that association to try and get, you know, better safety, better purses, those kind of things. Well, Mr. France, Big Bill, he didn't take too kindly to that, and when the question came up at Talladega as to the safety of the tires at the brand new track there, it was the first race they ever had at Talladega in the fall of 69. The tires were coming apart really bad after a couple of laps, and they voiced some safety concerns, and Mr. France basically told them to take those someplace else. So we had a boycott, and it's probably one of the few times, if the only time, we ever had a boycott of a race, where more than 30 competitors pulled out. So in order to have the inaugural race at Talladega, the inaugural cup race, they took cars from the previous day's Grand American race and put them in the field. So, yeah, you got Jimmy Vaughn, who, you know, didn't do as well in the Grand American race and made way more money in the cup race and did it all on one set of tires. So, you know, there's always the story kind of behind the story. In reality, and I know that you'll agree with this, Jack, the book is way more than 1,001 facts, because there's like four or five facts to every fact.
Right.
So it was it was really a labor of love, and again, I'm just really glad that it's being accepted as well as it is.
Yeah, it's a fun book. I think every race fan really needs to take a look at it and consider buying it. And I know it's on Amazon. John, do you have it anywhere else that fans can purchase it?
Well, Amazon is easily the best place, and it's usually the least expensive because you have a multitude of buyers, a multitude of different sites there that you can buy from and basically pick your own price and your own shipping. It's also available on CarTechBooks.com, which is the home site. I saw it today on Target.com, you know, like Target stores.
Wow.
So it is only available right now on the internet, which is actually a pretty good thing, because that way if you order it, you know, it comes right to your house, it comes right to your mailbox. But Amazon's a great place to get it. It's probably, because they have multiple vendors, it's probably also the least expensive place to get it. It has a $24.95 retail price on it, and I think today I saw it selling for like $16.67 plus $3 shipping.
Cool.
So you can still get it for under $20, like I said on my page today on Facebook for 1001 NASCAR Facts, it's a great Father's Day gift for any motorhead dad that's out there, you know, because you can get a great gift for under $20 delivered right to your door.
And it's a big book. It's 395 pages, I believe. So.
Yeah, there's a couple words in there, about 140,000 words and 125 or so photos, and the photos really do make the book. You know, I'm reasonably proud of the writing, but that old saying that a picture tells is worth a thousand words, that the pictures tell a really great story in this book, and I'm so honored to have some of them. The University of North Carolina at Charlotte here gave me access to some of T. Taylor Warren's photos. For a lot of fans out there, T. Taylor is probably the original dean of NASCAR photographers, and it was his photo that determined the inaugural winner, or the winner of the inaugural Daytona 500, when Johnny Beauchamp and Lee Petty came across, and it was the first time a photo finish had ever been used in NASCAR, and it took days to determine afterward, but they finally determined that Lee Petty won based on T. Taylor's photograph, and he was a great gentleman who was in the sport a long time, and fortunately enough, I got to meet him in the 80s and the 90s, and he's since passed, and a lot of his photos got donated here to the library at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, and so I got to include those, and I might also give a shout-out to you, Bud. There's some of the photos that you have in your collection that made the book.
Yeah, there's about three of them, I think.
Yeah, I think there's at least three of them, and you've been most generous with those to me and some of the projects that I've completed over the years. And for that, I'm very, very thankful. You know, it's fellas like you that really make these kind of projects work. So I do appreciate that, my friend.
Well, John Close, I appreciate you being on the show with us here on Racers Reunion. And I hope you'll come back and visit with us sometime. And if you're ever in Myrtle Beach on a Tuesday, please come by the studio.
Well, I love coming to the beach on any day of the week. And I don't get there often enough, but it's been a real thrill to be on the show, and I'd love to come back anytime you'll have me.
Fantastic. Well, thank you.
Have a great evening, guys.
All righty.
Very cool. I could see us using that book for a long time.
That's good. It's a good book. I mean, it's just
easy. Lots of more facts.
It's easier to read.
Yeah.
Bobby, you'll be interested in this. On the back cover, one of the things he highlights, if I can find it, was at the March 29th, 1959 NASCAR race at Wilson Speedway. Fans arrived to see the grandstands on fire, but the race did go on. And we've talked about that before.
As a matter of fact, I was talking about that on Facebook one day last week, that same the story that lives on forever.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to tell you a couple more if we got,
a
second here.
No, it's a great interview. I enjoyed it.
There was a couple other things I kind of highlighted, and I haven't even read the whole book, but it's hard to put it down once you start. I just haven't had the time. Back to Talladega in 1969. When Richard Brickhouse was offered the, I believe it was the Nichols Dodge, he He was also a member of the PDA, which Richard Petty was the president. Well, he tried to get hold of Petty to resign so he could drive the car. Never could get him, so he just resigned over the PA system.
But he did resign.
He did resign.
Patrick Reynolds wants you to repeat the title and the author.
For the listeners.
1001 NASCAR Facts by John Close.
Available on Amazon.
Amazon, yeah, and other places. One other one I kind of flagged. I just flagged a few of them. When Sam McQuaig was at Daytona for the 1966 Firecracker 400. This would be fact number 295. The car wasn't handling very well. So they came into the pits, attached some aluminum to the back, which became a spoiler, and he won the race. So that was the first car to go to victory lane with a spoiler.
No kidding. Mm.
So, it was a Dodge Charger.
Dodge Charger.
The fastback.
Yep. But anyway, that's a cool book. You guys need to get a copy.
So we got about 7 or 8 minutes left. Who wants to fill that?
I thought Cody might have some, or Tim. Cody?
I thought Tim might have a mini tour.
Yeah, I did too.
I do have a short legend tour.
Play it on us.
Go.
All right, it's entitled "Been a While." It has been a while since we've shared some time here on Tuesday night. Missed the interaction with my fellow panelists and missed the chat feedback from all you loyal listeners who have so much to say as we chat back and forth. We have just come off the biggest racing weekend in auto racing. The F1 in Monaco, the Indy 500, which I'm sure has been covered in detail or will soon be by Patrick and his Motor Week Live. I guess we need to stop, drop, and roll after the 600 in Charlotte. First, let me admit that I went to bed after the third, whatever it is they call that segmented fiasco, purporting to be a stock car race. Mostly I retired because I was really tired, and the entire front of the field was comprised of those Toyotas to which I have a strong aversion. It was the most pleasant surprise to awaken to the news that a Toyota did not win, but instead it was a first-time winner who just happened to be driving a black number 3 Chevrolet. I am aware, as are most fans, that the win was somewhat of a fluke, as it was a fuel mileage issue. But, as someone once said, a win is a win is a win. And that, dear hearts, you cannot take away from young Dylan. He did what the others had ample opportunity to do, but failed in the effort. So, Austin and the Richard Childress team, congratulations. And hopefully this will not be the last win for Austin. Once again, we were treated to a vivid display of poor sportsmanship, sore loser from Kyle Busch. His display in the press box was disgusting and an awful example to young kids who might have seen it who will be playing soccer, t-ball, football, or whatever. To blame it on Kyle's competitive spirit has worn thin to me, as he has no problem venturing into the trucks and Xfinity and taking candy from babies, his words. He and his JGR teammates were beaten fair and square, and the fact that he can't handle the show shows total lack of maturity and class. I often wonder if his son plays youth sports, what kind of example Kyle has set for him. I am also aware that sport's most popular driver sided with Kyle's display. Does that make it right? No, not my opinion, but just as I have an opinion, Dale Jr. is entitled to his. To my way of thinking, such a display as Kyle put on should result in strong sanctions by M&M Mars, but it won't. M&Ms could care less about their image, as it is obvious by their continued toleration of such unprofessional behavior. I sit here thinking of all the coaches my grandsons have had in the variety of sports over the years, and the fine examples set forth for my grandsons. I think of my highly competitive grandson Sam, a true soccer star in high school, and how he took his frustrations privately and was then good to go. And he is only 18. Perhaps he could give Kyle Busch some sportsmanship lessons. He can certainly give Kyle Busch maturity lessons. So that's it for the week. I'm not even going into this mess about downforce, clean air, or any of that mess NASCAR continues to play with, although the answers are so simple. Maybe one day Kyle Busch will have a good attitude when he fairly loses a race. And maybe one day NASCAR will realize the travesty of what they are presenting to the fans. Thank you, guys.
Back so there's our Tim. He's back.
Yeah.
I'm back. I'm back. If you didn't see Kyle's display in the press box, you ought to check it out.
I didn't see it.
No. I didn't see it, and I don't think I want to
watch it.
Yeah. They asked him, were you surprised that Austin Dillon was able, and Kyle's got this look on his face that just a two-year-old pouting that he didn't get what he wanted for Christmas, and he says, I'm not surprised by anything. Congratulations. Threw the mic down on the counter. Then takes a big huff like that. He is a dense SOB.
Absolutely. Tim, tell us what you really think.
Hey, God, I thought Tim really had turned soft on us for a while.
He's back.
He's back.
He's back. Yeah. Hey, you know how many times in the years we've been doing this, Tim's gone through this kinder, gentler Tim cycle? He can't hold it in forever, though, guys.
No,
we know it's there.
You can't hold it in when you've got some idiot like Kyle the sport and showing what a poor sportsmanship. That he and you know to see have a kid. Can you imagine a 5 or 6 year old kid that thought Kyle Busch was such a hero seeing that kind of action? And it is over and over and over, and nobody does anything about it. Goody two shoes, goody two shoes. Great Christian JG Joe Gibbs, has he done anything about it? Hell no, he hasn't done anything about it. He lets him get right on away with it.
This is what happens when Tim's not on the air on a regular basis.
He feels that pressure.
It's
just like a pressure valve, man. You know,
a pressure cooker. When it explodes,
when
it goes.
Legendorial, it started, and man, oh, man. Buddy, I'm glad you got all that off your chest. You've got to feel better now.
Well, you know what the bad thing makes it even worse was Brad Keselowski said he shouldn't have done that because what I do is take my frustrations out by trying to do a better job next time. And that Andy Graves, that SOB with Toyota Racing Development, put something on Twitter about Keselowski should shut his mouth. Well, Andy Graves, if you ever hear this, you shut your damn mouth, you butt. You know, because I'll be glad to drive my butt to California and put my fist in your Toyota Camry looking mouth.
So.
Boy, I want to go to that.
Yeah. I'll pay for that too, Cody.
Yeah. I'd pay to go see that.
I want tickets.
Let's go.
I want tickets
because
for that.
I'm fed up with this crap that we put up with NASCAR. It's just
ruining your life.
No, it's not ruining my life because I could get up and walk away from it. But, you know, I still
like
watching.
No, you can't.
I still like.
No, you can't do it. You cannot walk away from it. You can't.
No, I guess you're right because I guess I have been around it for so long that it's just so much a part of me. And that's why I hate to see goobers like Kyle Busch come in there and screw it up. And whatever they say about his competitive spirit, do you not think Fireball Roberts was competitive? Do you not think Junior Johnson was competitive? What about Tim Flott? What about Herb Thomas? Did they ever show their butts like that? Hell no, they didn't. You got this spoiled brat from Las Vegas that's got a poker trip rammed up his butt, and he needs to do something about it.
Well, and there you have it, folks.
And even his brother learned to calm his act down.
Yeah, that's the way it was, ladies and gentlemen. Tuesday, May the 30th, 2017.
Great job, Tim.
That was awesome, buddy.
I like that a lot.
That's the best legendorial we've had in a long time, buddy.
Pressure valve let off.
Yeah. He just added 5 years to his life.
Yeah, it was disgusting, but you know, I wrote him and M&M Mars about that, and I sent it directly to him and M&M Mars, and well, we're not pleased with such behavior. Blah 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 blah. But the bottom line was, if you think we're going to do anything about it, go buy a Hershey bar.
So I'm really glad that we could be here for you tonight, Tim. Can you
thank
imagine,
you,
folks?
You saved my psychiatrist for some suicide.
Yeah. Can you imagine what he'd gone through if he had hold that in for another day?
Pressure.
Thank you. Thanks to all of you that put this thing together. Big old thanks to John Close. of close finishes for 1001 NASCAR Facts, a preview of the book here tonight on this here Goat Rodeo. Jack Walker, thanks for bringing him in, man.
That was cool,
really,
Jack.
Really cool.
Good.
That was cool, yeah.
Sorry, we had a little bit of issue getting you guys on Skype early, but I think it's holding its own now. Thanks. Look forward to seeing y'all back here next Tuesday night for the Goat Rodeo of that version. Who knows what will happen next? You've seen a taste of that here tonight. So
never know.
Good night to everybody. Thanks to all the men and women that serve in the military, past and present. Thanks for doing what you do so that we can come in here and do it. Each and every one of you, good night. And God bless.
Yeah, I'll shake your hand, pal, but only time will tell. If there's a devil in your helmet, who's on tonight?
Devil in your helmet.
Devil in your helmet.